So our next guest has been mucking it up in the corridors of the legal system as a lawyer for the better part of two decades. Not just any area, in the deep and mysterious area of bankruptcy and insolvency, but you cannot go bankrupt if you're a cannabis business because bankruptcy is a federal jurisdiction and cannabis is illegal at the federal level. I hear you cry in unison, well, lawyers are very clever and so is Richard Orman. And Richard is building up a cannabis practice, a consulting practice that accomplishes many of the same things as bankruptcy without actually going bankrupt. Only a lawyer would think of that. Well, maybe not the most positive topic we've had on the business of cannabis, but given the current climate in the cannabis industry, financial viability is a pressing issue. And Richard helps companies and investors survive difficult financial periods in order to come out on the other side and stay in business. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, David. It's really a pleasure. I always enjoy speaking with you.
So let me ask you just sort of a larger question. So what are the financial pressures that you're finding cannabis businesses and investors are facing that you're seeing in your consulting practice?
So cannabis is a young industry, and any business that's starting up, whether it's cannabis or non-cannabis, always has challenges just as a starting business. So the typical challenges that a business faces, a cannabis business faces as well. But cannabis has some extra layers of problems that are really, really causing distress in the industry right now. One of them, and the primary one, is taxes. The tax schemes are what I call a mosaic of different schemes that you have to deal with at many different levels. So you have a federal tax scheme, which under the federal tax clause 280E does not allow a business that is illegal under the federal laws to deduct and depreciate certain aspects of their business. And so many of these cannabis businesses are having to pay almost full freight at the federal level when it comes to taxes. So you're talking about 35-40% of gross revenue going straight to tax payments at the federal level. Then the states, seeing this as an opportunity to improve their coffers, are taxing these cannabis businesses from 15-25%. And then you have, of course, local governments, which are adding on their own taxes, sometimes as high as 10 or 12%. So you're looking at 60, 70, 80% of revenue going to taxes, which doesn't even include licensing fees. It doesn't include legal fees. It doesn't include permits. And so there is a challenge right now for businesses to even stay afloat just because of the tax scheme. Couple that with the fact that you have local governments that require onerous licensing processes and states that have onerous licensing processes, you're spending a lot of money just to get into the business itself. And then finally, many of the states have what I call a barrier to entry, that you cannot really get a cannabis business without having a piece of real estate in one of these green zones, as we call them, already secured either by a long-term lease or by purchase. And so you have all these financial outputs that you have.
Oh, so you might have incurred a debt before you've even started the business.
Absolutely. Right. So the only way to stay afloat right now is to get new money in. And that's either by issuing debt or by raising capital. And so those businesses that are able to raise capital can just moderately stay afloat. And those that can't are facing a lot of problems right now. And revenues keep going down because the second problem in the industry right now is that prices are depressed. And so a price per pound for cannabis today is 150% less than it was just 2 years ago. So people were paying $2,000, $2,500 a pound for prime cannabis. Now that price is below $1,000. And so you have really a lot of pressures that are happening. My own personal feeling is that there's going to be some sort of brand consolidation of the industry, and that this is one of the necessary steps that we're going to have to go through to get to greener pastures. No pun intended there.
Right, but, of course. Well, no one in cannabis can resist the pun, the pun and the green, yeah, and the leaf and the, yeah. Let me ask you though, I'm hearing there is a structural impediment to success.
Absolutely.
So is it even increased revenues won't solve this problem because you're just paying more tax?
That's right.
So how is it even viable for this industry? How is this industry even afloat if what you're saying is true. It's not that we, I agree it's true, but how is it afloat even?
So it's a great question. It's really afloat because people believe that at some point in the near future, the federal government will relax its restrictions in one form or another, and that will open up the doors for interstate commerce. And that will then create a real cannabis industry that is open for everyone to participate in across the country.
Are they waiting for that, or are they waiting for simply the 280E? Like, would the tax reform not solve that? Would, if they just were treated from a tax perspective like any business, would that solve the problem?
It would, but that would require a lot more reform than just reforming the tax code.
I see.
Because that 280 stems directly from the illegality of the product itself at the federal level. And so there would have to be really an act by Congress to change that at this point. It wouldn't be a regulatory change. It would have to be a legal change. And the legal change would have to come from a few places. The Controlled Substances Act, which makes cannabis a Schedule I drug, which is a higher schedule than drugs like cocaine or heroin. It would have to change at the banking level. Right now, there's a Safe Harbor Act that's pending before Congress, which has been pending for years in different iterations that I see unlikely to pass soon, but people
right. are hoping. Bouncing around, yeah.
Yeah, people are hoping that it'll pass and give them better access to banking.
No, I can see Congress beginning to cooperate with each other and being sensible. I think that's going to happen. I'm a pretty good judge of political situations, so. Yeah.
So you have too many moving parts in this grand mosaic put together for there to be a silver bullet. But I do think this, I do see businesses that are really well run that are eking out either a moderate profit or keeping a balance sheet that makes them attractive to investors. And those businesses have done, a lot of them are integrated vertically, which helps because it gives them control of all aspects from seed to sale. That is attractive to outside investors. The other thing is corporate governance, because there, while 280E affects the what I would call the leaf touching businesses, there are ways to structure your corporate entities in a way that certain things can be in essence siloed from
right and from I'm not the, a, from the leaf right
yeah and I'm not advocating tax evasion. I'm advocating tax intelligence.
Okay. to be clear. We're not advocating to break the law.
Right. Talk
to your accountant, to the lawyer.
Yeah, talking to a tax professional to figure out how to structure your business so that you minimize your tax impact is absolutely critical, because every dollar counts in this industry. And I've worked with a lot of businesses, and simply by restructuring their corporate governance, it changes the outlook completely and makes their balance sheet much more attractive.
Well, let's jump into that. Let's get brass tacks. What is it? Okay, I come to you. Geez, Richard, like, I've got this grow, and I've got these 10 dispensaries, and I'm just drowning here, and it's not getting better. And like you said, revenues are down because the cost of the product is down, and all these problems. What can you do for me?
What
are the options on the table, in other words?
One of the things that I tell people is that I need 2 days to be locked in a room with your corporate governance documents and your balance sheet, your P&L, and other records. And what I do is I do a holistic kind of full body approach to your industry. The first being that I'm going to look at how your corporate governance is structured to see where you are tax inefficient, and then have you hire a tax professional that will help you be more tax efficient. That's step number one. But step number two is that there are structures out there where you can take part of the body and amputate an arm or a leg by putting them into one of the what I call quasi insolvency actions that are out there. They're alternatives to bankruptcy. Just because you can't file bankruptcy doesn't mean you can't be insolvent and go through some sort of claims process. So there are different options out there that exist for businesses to be able to try and get, back on their feet. The first is that if you have a cooperative investor or lender, you might be able to do a receivership where a state court actually puts a monitor over your business and allows that monitor to sell certain assets, usually free and clear of liens, to generate cash to pay off creditors. A receivership is one of the oldest existing parts of common law. It goes all the way back to the Norman invasion of 1066 when the courts of chancery in England were established. Well, a story for another day, but it's well established in our court system as a form of relief for businesses, investors, and lenders. The second alternative is something called an ABC, which is short for an assignment for benefit for creditors, where in essence, it's a bankruptcy process without the bankruptcy court, where a business assigns all of its assets to a neutral trustee. That trustee then either liquidates those assets or sells those assets to a new buyer and takes the proceeds and pays off, just like in a bankruptcy scheme, secured creditors first, then general and secureds and everything else that would be in that waterfall of payments out to. And it is not bulletproof, but one of the biggest risks of an ABC is actually being put into an involuntary bankruptcy, but that is not available to your creditors because it's a federal process. And so that is off the table. So it makes it very attractive. The secondary risk is that the entity gets sued. But if it's an insolvent entity that's going through a dissolution process and then does a corporate dissolution, it's a hollow judgment that creditor is going to get. So creditors are really encouraged by state courts to participate in the ABC because they'll probably get more out of that ABC than they will out of
it. Yeah, it's just a common sense process, a thinking process. Yeah.
That's right. Then
please work it out and not go bankrupt. Or, you know.
Then we have alternatives under Article 9 of the UCC. That is where a secured creditor can foreclose on assets. And if you're a secured creditor, this is an option that may be attractive to try to get the assets out of the control of a bad borrower. Or sometimes the borrower and the creditor have enough communication where the borrower can work with the lender to effectuate an Article 9 where the assets can be purchased by a third party and given new life. And so there are...
A grow operation or real estate or whatever it is.
And sometimes you can carve off certain aspects of the business that way. When I say amputate part of the body, that's exactly what I'm talking about, where part of the business is inefficient and maybe a new operator can make it efficient and wants those assets. That equipment is expensive. The know-how and goodwill has value in many instances. And so that is something that could be an option for a business as well. And so when I sit there and do kind of like this holistic analysis, I have a lot of bolts in my quiver that I'm able to pull out and use on a case-by-case basis. And each case looks different. Sometimes I'll effectuate an Article 9 foreclosure, and that will be enough to give new life to the remaining business. Sometimes you've got to take the whole business and just dissolve it and sell off the assets piece by piece and liquidate them so that somebody else can have a go at it.
So the sum of the parts are worth more than the whole, in other words.
In many instances.
Yeah.
But this industry is really at a tipping point right now. And I do think that you're going to see a lot of people fall by the wayside because they have not had the protocols in place to be able to weather a storm. One of the things I used to talk about when this industry was young was that we were pioneers and the protocols we put into place today are going to have an impact, you know, three, sure. 4, 6 years down the line. And now that is coming to fruition.
And this is now.
This is now.
Right.
Businesses that didn't contemplate their corporate structure, their corporate governance, their operating agreements, how they structured their debt, how they structured their investors. Are paying a high price.
We're talking to Richard Orman, a bankruptcy insolvency consultant, a former lawyer, or a recovering lawyer, as the joke is, in California. We're talking about ways in which companies can get themselves into financial problems. It sounds like not always their fault, but and then how they can get out of it using some of these techniques. Let me ask you. First of all, is there some sort of financial rules of thumb, receivership, ABC, Article 9? None of this stuff sounds cheap because it's not like I fill out a form and get it done. So give me some ballparks on what we're talking, how much work we're talking about.
So it really is a case-by-case basis, but an ABC will probably cost someone anywhere between $75,000 and $150,000 to effectuate, soup to nuts. Wow.
Okay.
So, whereas a Chapter 11 bankruptcy would probably cost two or three times that amount.
Okay.
So you've got it's all relative, of course.
Right. It's a deal, but it's a relative deal.
Yeah. A receivership involves court involvement, so it involves lawyers, and so there's a cost with that as well.
Right.
Receivership application alone can cost anywhere as little as $5,000 and as much as $25,000 just to get the case started and the receivership initiated. Hopefully there's enough assets in the receivership estate to cover the cost of the receiver, but the party seeking the receiver is typically on the hook for any deficiencies there. So there's the cost.
There's risk, right?
So there's risk. But when you can't go into bankruptcy court, the cost is probably still less than what you would have done in a bankruptcy situation. An Article 9 foreclosure is different. That requires the hiring of a foreclosure trustee. I provide those services, and I usually charge $25,000 for my services as a flat fee. And then there's probably the involvement of some lawyers that's going to cost another $25,000 to $50,000. So it's a less costly process, but it doesn't apply in every situation. You have to have a secured lien against the company. You have to have you have to have the basis to be able to foreclose, a perfected lien that is foreclosable. So, and then of course, if you have senior liens or junior liens, there's protocols to deal with those folks as well. And it doesn't avoid a lawsuit. It doesn't, it doesn't give you a clean sheet afterwards, arguably.
People listening to this, cannabis businesses in various guises are probably getting that feeling in their chest. What advice can you give? We don't have a ton of time left, but what advice can you give to either a business just starting or a business that's out there to not have to call you?
So I
like, what can I do? Or because it sounds like you're a pretty busy guy and you're going to get busier.
Yeah. So if I was starting a cannabis business today, there's a couple of things I would definitely consider. One is corporate governance, making sure that I have the right corporate structure to be able to isolate certain assets and keep them out of the leaf touching arena so that their tax implications will be different from the leaf touching business. So for example, if you're going to own real estate, that should be owned by what we call a special purpose entity, and it should have a formal lease between the entities. Your upstream owners should look a little bit different so that you don't have the IRS saying that this is an alter ego situation. I would also ensure that I have my corporate governance documents in order. One of the biggest problems I'm seeing right now is where founders of these businesses are in dispute with each other because they don't know who owns what, because they never ever formalize things. And part of that is a legacy issue, because cannabis businesses were coming from a market to a white market. But part of it
don't
is,
don't be so uptight, man. It's just, let's start the business. And
yeah. Right. And then
5, 10 years later.
Yeah. People say, well, that's going to cause a fight when they're fighting over the spoils, but now they're really responsible for the liabilities, because there are certain obligations that if someone pierces a corporate veil, one of the things they look at is, what is your corporate governance look like?
Right. It's him. It's him. It's her. It's not me.
That's right. So
okay.
It creates a lot of, secondary, tertiary disputes that are really, really costly to the business.
So how do you, let me just ask you one last question. In a year or two, what do you think you're going to be working on a lot in the next little while? What do you see coming down the pipe a little bit of crystal balling here?
I think you're going to see a lot of businesses disappear. I think you're going to see a lot of brands.
All types of businesses, plant touching businesses or at all?
I think a lot of businesses that are cannabis related, leaf touching and cannabis adjacent are going to be consolidated or
just go away.
Just go away. Just dissolve. I think, in business school, they talk about the rule of three. I didn't go to business school, but I've heard this from others.
Okay, a rumor.
Every major industry eventually drills down into three major players. It happened in the automobile industry. It happened in the radio industry. It happened in the television industry. It's happening now with the streaming industry. It's happening with the tech industry. We now have 5 major players in the tech industry. And in 10, 15 years, we'll probably have 3 major players in the tech industry. And cannabis will be no different. It's just in those very early stages when everybody had a radio station in their garage and they were trying to transmit.
Right.
And either they shut down or they were bought out by, you know, NBC, CBS, or ABC.
Right. So this is the 50s, and now we're getting into the right.
That's right. And I think that you're going to see a competition at a very high level, because you're going to see tobacco companies, alcohol companies, and pharmaceutical companies vying to be the big players in this industry. And as the federal government regulations ease, they're going to become much more prevalent in the industry in different ways, whether it is through joint ventures, partnerships, et cetera. But they're going to have in that documentation buried very deep that they have a right of first refusal to buy out whoever they're working with, because brands will become much more important in the future. I do think this, though. I don't think the federal government's going to do anything overnight. I think it's going to be a very gradual change.
Okay. So a little bit of pain before we get to that maybe next stage you're alluding to.
Yeah.
A lot of that 2 days locked in the room, I see you doing that. Might be more than 2 days. you might have to book a room for 3 days.
I say two days, but it's with
rabbit ears. I'm doing the air quotes here. Two days. Rich, we're talking to Richard Ormond, a Californian bankruptcy insolvency consultant. But it sounds like if you're a cannabis business, either talk to this Richard or a Richard clone. Because these are important, these are vitally important issues, even if they're not the sexy, exciting ones. It's what's going to keep you in business, or it's what's going to allow you to stay in business. Because reality, what I'm hearing is reality is hitting the road, maybe not this very day, but in the next year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Coming to a town near you, as they say.
Yep.
Reality, that is.
And as more states come online, I think we're going to see more problems. If you look at New York right now, which is coming online in a big way, the press is very negative. Florida has its own issues. Michigan is a challenging state right now. Massachusetts is a challenging state. So this is a nationwide problem right now.
Right.
And I've been consulting with businesses across the country about how to try to avoid this or how to get themselves
navigate reality. Right. You can't escape it. You just can. It may be. And like you said, it'll be a super interesting story. Who will be able to navigate it the best, and those will be the winners. Your three people. We probably can. What I'm hearing is we could maybe trace them today, to this moment in time, and they will emerge. You can't see them yet, but they're doing it. Richard, thank you very much for your time. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but thank you so much for your insights. Such a super interesting. It's so easy to be unreasonably optimistic. It's nice to be just driven by what's happening. And certainly someone who's in the trenches with these companies. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we will be back with more of The Business of Cannabis.